Hi, everyone, and welcome to another very special Talking Some episode. We have Ben with us. Welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Daniel.
Super nice having you as well. And where in the world are you?
I'm in Brisbane, Australia. So it's 7 a.m. here right
all
now.
Right. Very, very cool. So yeah, just for the audience to know, you sent me a message on Instagram saying that, you know, the channel's been really helpful. And and then you actually volunteered to be a guest, which is super nice because, like, hope, inspiration is like, we can't get enough of that. So thankful for that. And without further ado, really, tell us your story.
Yeah, sweet. So I've experienced insomnia twice now in my life, chronically. The first time was back during the pandemic. It was just a bit of a stressful time and I didn't really know what I was doing, how to sort of like handle it. So the second time, it was a bit shorter because I had sort of like handled it before. I'm a huge believer in Martin Reeves' 3P model, which I'm sure you're aware of. So if like, what's the first P again? Sorry.
Yes, absolutely. I thought since you brought it up, we should like talk a little bit about it. Like the first P is like predisposing factors.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, predisposing. I'm a pretty like anxious fellow. That's fine. Like I've just like been I've just been dealing with that my whole life. It's all good. So the second is it the perpetuating?
Precipitating. Yeah.
Precipitating. The precipitating factor was I'm a PhD student and I'm nearing the end of my studies and I'm under an immense amount of pressure. Which is quite common. I was quite overwhelmed by it all and I was just struggling to sleep and catastrophizing about a lot of things, which was sort of just like keeping me up. I had a bit of personal stuff happening as well, which is probably private, so I won't go into. I just couldn't sleep. And at first, my sleep troubles were, you know, due to those stresses. And then, you know, because I had been an insomniac in the past, it quickly turned into, oh my God, what if I become an insomniac again? Lo and behold, every time I got into bed, I had like a racing heart and I just like was like tired and wired. And and then I had it for like, 2-3 months, which I understand in the grand scheme of things isn't that long. However, it was, you know, it does a lot to you, being an insomniac. I got quite sad, and people couldn't really understand like why I was sad. Like, is it because this is happening in your life? Is it because this is happening in your life? I'm like, no, man, it's just, I'm not sleeping. I don't have the resources to sort of like deal with things right now because I'm not sleeping. And then like, you know, everything you read online is about, you know, oh my God, if you don't get like 8 hours sleep, you're going to lose an arm or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and so, it was pretty rough, but sort of how I kind of like got out of it was
that's actually, sorry to interrupt, Ben, but before we talk about kind of how things got easier, first of all, I just want to ask about like a little bit of the timeline. So the first episode of Insomnia was kind of when the pandemic started. Yep. Or that area.
It was like midway through the pandemic. Yeah.
So if we go back from now, like, would you say like 2 years ago or something like that?
Yeah, I'd say about 2 years ago. Yeah.
Very. And was it also related to, you think, like the studies, the PhD studies then, or not so clear?
No, it wasn't related to PhD studies then. It was sort of me being a bit like anxious about life at the time. Yeah.
All right. So some life stress. But was that... you know, how long was that and how intense was that kind of first period?
Oh, I can't even remember it that much. It's like just a life ago now. But I think, yeah, it lasted like maybe probably like 5 months. You know, it like sort of like started off and then like peaked and then like, you know, tapered off over time, I would say. I'd say it probably started like July and ended probably like October, maybe. I really valued sleep after that. Like I was like a good sleeper and I was like proud of that. And it was super frightening when my insomnia started.
Well, yeah. And just to spend just a little bit more time there, but that first period, you know, you said like more recently here, like it does a number on you, like, you know, was the first period was also like that. It was quite intense that first time
too. It was super intense. I was going through a lot, like mentally. I was like, how old? I was like 23. I'd never really sort of had like anything like crazy, not crazy, I shouldn't use the word crazy, but like hadn't had anything like major. I had
any no of these major, kind of like internal struggles,
health.
Yeah.
Yeah, mental health issues. It was my first time. So it was really strange sort of like terrain to navigate. Sorry, what was your question?
Yeah, no, it was sort of like that. Like it was really quite intense the first time too. And did you go into like the, you know, the usual like, you know, supplements and sleep hygiene?
Totally. Yeah. So I started off like probably most people do, just like drinking a bit before bed, like a bit of a nightcap, which I don't condone. I don't recommend at all. And if anything, like what I did quickly learn after doing it like once or twice was it's really easy to sort of like slip and have like more than one, and then if anything, alcohol sort of just makes any emotions you're feeling kind of intensified, scales them up a bit. So you know, if you're anxious and you're drunk, you're probably going to be like more anxious. That was my experience anyway, so I would not recommend that to anyone doing it. I didn't do it more than once. Then, you know, I did the whole like antihistamine. We have something over here called Phenergan. Do you have that?
It's probably something similar to what we call Benadryl here or diphenhydramine.
Right. Yeah, so I did that. Oh my God, I'm blanking right now because it's so early for me. What's the thing that helps your like
melatonin?
Yes. yeah. She loves melatonin. A lot of melatonin. And the main thing that just kind of helped was being okay and just like not caring as much, I guess. I was on benzos as well. The doctor prescribed me some benzos and but I didn't use them too much.
All right, so you did end up seeing a doctor for this, even the first
time? Yeah, both times. Mm-hmm.
And you know, probably my last question about that first period was like, it sounds to me, and by the way, this is not uncommon at all, that it somehow ended a little bit mysteriously. It kind of just stopped. Is that how you'd say it too, or?
Yes and no. I think it didn't stop mysteriously because I sort of believed in what you and sort of Martin Reeves preach. So I was just kind of like, well, if I just hang in there, maybe it'll go away. The biggest game changer for me, well, one of the biggest game changers that comes to mind at the very least was your timeless sleep window. That actually was incredible. And I noticed after that it kind of got better. Not quickly, not right away, but yeah, it got better.
So you had found, you know, this channel and Martin Reed even the first period there?
No, not the first time. The first time it kind of just got better I think I was just like working on my mental health and slowly and just being like super kind to my towards myself and being like, you know, like it'll be okay. I think it was a lot of like, it was very like acty looking back, where it was kind of like, well, you know, I can't make it happen. I can't make the sleep happen. But right now I'm super like calm, I'm super relaxed. Isn't this like really nice? Aren't I really lucky to be on this bed right now? Oh, why don't I just like listen to a podcast I find interesting? And then like, you know, I might, when I started, like when it was like just sort of like way to reframe being awake. And then, you know, slowly but surely I was getting like more and more hours of sleep. And then like, you know, every now and again you get a day where you get like bugger all sleep, but you kind of just like, that's just part of it. And, you know, as like, Martin says this a lot in his podcast, where he's like, you know, this sort of like true test of whether you're recovering is when you have a bad night and then like you still sort of like carry on the next day. How you react to that will determine, after you've had like a stream of good nights, that will determine, you know, how whether you're going to recover or not, or how easy your recovery will be. And yeah, I believe in that quite a lot. I noticed that like once I stopped like caring, it's a lie to say I stopped caring. But like once I, you know, just sort of stopped trying to control it, and just like kind of like let it happen and then just like carried on with my day. Despite being on like 2 hours sleep, it was like all good, you know. It was a pretty funny story. So when I was in like sort of the grips of it, when it was like really bad this time, I ended up moving back into my mum's just for like a month or so. She was quite worried about me, and I decided to go on leave from the PhD. So I was like, well, I have like no reason to sort of like be living closer to the city. I'll go stay with my mum for a bit. I'm been with her for a while. And yeah, it was lovely. But you know, it didn't make the sleep problems go away. But I probably slept from like 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. this day in particular. It was terrible. I was just like very frustrated. And I wanted to do nothing all day except like lie down in bed, and like, you know, like feel a bit sorry for myself and stuff like that. Then, you know, my mom's like, hey, I'm going to go to gym. I'm going to go to the gym, do a spin class. I can bring a friend for free. Would you like to come to that? It might tire you out. And that's what everyone likes to say. They're like, oh, you're getting plenty of exercise so that you're tired once you hit the bit. And it's like, it's not how it works. Yes, I'm like going for a run. Anyway, I kind of like entertained the idea for a bit. And after a while, I was like, you know what? Like, I'm going to go to the spin class. And I was like, if I can, after like 2-3 hours sleep, chronically, after a stream of like nights of like, you know, 2-4 hours sleep, go to this like high intensity spin class, and you know, like perform at a decent level, like a good enough level, like there's like no reason to, you know, apart from like health issues, there is like no reason to sort of like fear my insomnia anymore. And so that's kind of what I did, and I went. And I had a great time. The instructor even came up to me afterwards and asked if I wanted to like learn to be an instructor for spin classes, which was awesome. And then, yeah, I just left the gym being like, yeah, like it's all good. Like I can do this. I can live my life. Like the thing when you, like, as probably many of your listeners know, when you are an insomniac, you kind of feel like life is on pause a little bit. Yeah. It's kind of like, it's like an analogy I like to use is like, if you've woken up like hungover, you're kind of like, oh, it's today's a write-off. I'm not gonna, it's Sunday, we don't worry about today, I'm just gonna spend the day recovering, watching Netflix and not doing anything. And when you have like chronic insomnia, it's like, oh, you wake up every morning, you're like, today is a write-off. And so you're kind of like just in this period of like not really feeling like you're alive. Like, you're alive, but you're not like living. And so yeah, that's that was like a direct challenge to that, you know, going to the spin class and like genuinely enjoying myself and being like, yeah, like, who cares? Like, I'm struggling right now, but life is still wonderful. You know, I can still have these like precious moments. I was doing a spin class with my mom, who I love. Like, you know, it was a really like nice moment, and insomnia didn't rob me of that. And yeah, so it kind of like had a little less power after that. And then like I challenged it in more ways and more ways and more ways. And like, yeah, like I keep saying, it didn't get better overnight. It just was a gradual sort of like, you know, like recovery process, put like, you know, taking power away from it. Even now I still have like a night where I get like 5 hours, and I'm just like, well, that happened, you know, carry on. yeah.
No, that's, you know, thanks for sharing that. It's a super nice and sweet analogy and helpful. And, you know, it's one of the common, you know, one of the most common kind of like, you know, magical insights where we see like, okay, I can do things even if I haven't slept much. And yeah. It's like, yeah, I love that write-off analogy. I never heard that one before. Very nice. Like that day could have been a write-off, but instead you did something, and then it's like, okay, I know very few days, if any, have to be write-offs. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, we have a kind of a few loose ends, and then some other questions I have. But first of all, so we don't forget this one, the 3P model.
Yes, I was gonna say, yeah.
You wanna complete it, or?
Oh, okay. So
I can do it. Yeah.
There's perpetuating's the last P. Okay. I'm going to let you, you're the expert here. I'm going to let you explain it. I think that's a better way to go.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, you've already mentioned like we can have these like, now I'm forgetting the first one. Something that predisposing. Yeah. Yeah. Predisposing. Like we can have these predisposing traits. Like some of us are like super easy go lucky, and some of us are kind of a little bit of safety oriented, type A perfectionist, type of like that, you know. And then that person who's like a little bit more type A, if you will, is sort of more predisposed towards insomnia because it has to do with like wanting to have control, but it doesn't predict anything. Like you can have that trait your whole life and never have insomnia, you know. So but it can be helpful to know that it exists, because then there's less mystery, right? And then there's the precipitating factor, which is like any type of stress in our lives, you know, which also isn't really a problem because all of us have stress and all of us have times where we sleep less, right? So if we don't really react to it, nothing happens. But then comes that third P, which is the, you know, perpetuating factors, which is basically things like, oh, something is wrong, I got to do something. Let me try a nightcap. Let me try the melatonin. Yeah. Let me try this, which reinforces the idea that there is a problem. Right?
Yeah, you're like, oh my god, it's not working, something must be wrong with me. My brain is broken, you know. So yeah,
so we completed that one. That's good, just for the audience. And then I wanted to take a step like out, like big picture, and like when I hear your story, Ben, I hear a story of like, okay, you did have insomnia for those 5 months, and then sort of like in a way, somehow being lucky, but also doing this like really wonderful ACT or ACT work, which is very similar to what I teach, and I think similar to what Martin teaches also, you saw things get better because you were kind of like just generally less reactive, letting things be and all these things. But I think there was maybe just a little bit something lacking, which was that kind of like sleep education, you know, like, right? And that's why there was still like that fear of having insomnia again and those type of things. Would you agree?
Yeah, I viewed it as fragile after that, right? Like, I was like, oh my god, like, this is something I must protect. It's good now. It's good. But yeah, now that I've educated myself in terms of sleep, like you just said, I don't doubt that I might, like, have a period of like insomnia again in the future, but like I don't, the fact that I've sort of like beaten it twice now leads me to think that it's going to be okay if that does happen, and I will probably have the tools to deal with it properly. Maybe I won't, maybe because I do have the sleep education, I won't. But yeah, I just view sleep like fundamentally differently now after that experience. One thing that I actually want to talk to you about, Daniel, is how homogenous the sort of like psychology, how sort of like similar each case of insomnia is. Like I was listening to your interviews when I'd go to sleep. I was listening to Martin Reeves' interviews when I'd go to sleep. And when you're an insomniac, you think you're the only one. And not only that, but you think that your case is unique. But it is everything down to your very thoughts are predictable. And I actually found it fascinating. I started to find it fascinating that I was an insomniac and other insomniacs exist. Like I would be listening to an interview and then someone would say something and I'd be like, that's literally like a thought I had yesterday. What? Oh my God, that's another thought I had. I did this to combat my sleep. And you know, it's kind of like, as humans, we just have these sort of like, it seems that we have these sort of like default sort of responses or reactions to sleep, which are just uniform and highly predictable and counteractive. I mean, not counteractive, not helpful as well.
Yeah, counterproductive. Yeah, yeah.
Counterproductive, that's what. Yeah. So, yeah, I just found that super fascinating. And I started viewing sort of my insomnia as interesting. Not that I wanted it at all, but I was kind of like, oops, sorry. That's my wake up alarm. I started viewing it as, I just differently and fascinating. And it was so funny because I talked to people who'd never had sleeping problems their whole life, and they're kind of like, you would talk to them about it, and then like some of the solutions that they'd propose would also be like some of the solutions that like the counterproductive sort of solutions, right? And it's it's very interesting. The psychology of an insomniac, I think.
I agree with you. Like it's fascinating that people from like all kinds of like every place in the world, every type of like, I don't know, demographic, background, age, you know, gender, all that type of things are sort of responses to something we find threatening inside of us, like this inside. It's very, very similar. Very, very similar. Yeah. And by the way, when that change happens, when we go from like being sort of inside a struggle, be like, how do I find my way out, to like the outside perspective of like, oh, this is kind of interesting what my brain is up to and happening. Like it helps so much because we're not inside it. We're outside of it. And it automatically leads to things fading out. Right. You saw that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like that sort of analogy you just used then, like kind of being an outsider looking in, it just allows you to sort of like disconnect from your thoughts. You know, like kind of being like, I'm not my thoughts, and sort of just observe them, which is super helpful as well. So, yeah.
Very nice. And we talked about the first episode. Oh, yeah. But by the way, this is just kind of for the audience and for you too, by the way. But when somebody has like had insomnia and then not having it anymore, but hasn't really fully understood, oftentimes it can be like, I call this state like a truce, where this kind of like the battle is over, but it's kind of like, it's a truce. Like, okay, if you don't attack me, I won't do anything. We keep everything.
That is such a good analogy. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is like, it can seem for that person that they're in like, I'm a good place. The truce is good. But in reality, you're not quite free. You still have like little rules and reservations. Did you have a little rules left?
Ah, yeah. I had like little rules. Like, you got to go to bed by this time, and you're not allowed to look at the clock when you're in bed. And I can't remember them, but they were definitely rules. And then, like, you know, over time, you sort of, like, drop the rules one at a time. But, yeah, they were definitely there. Oh, yeah, it was things like if I would watch something to fall asleep, I needed it to be like long enough such that the video wouldn't end before I fell asleep, because I know how long the video is. And if the video is 20 minutes long and I watch the entire thing without falling asleep, that means I've been lying awake for 20 minutes. And that for some reason is bad. So I'd have like rules like that where it was like, yeah, it's actually kind of similar to your like timeless sleep window, except like your timeless sleep window is more about like just not knowing the time. For me, it would be like I would know, oh, I started watching this at like 11:30, and it's 20 minutes long, therefore it's nearly midnight. Oh my god. So like that's kind of the difference, I think, where it's like, oh, like in the timeless sleep window, you can watch a 20 minute video. And if you don't fall asleep, it's fine. You know, it's 20 minutes, but you don't know what the time is. So it's like, oh, well, like, you know, it doesn't really matter. So absolutely, that's kind of the difference. Yeah.
And another thing that just popped up in my mind is like, we have this teaching around what we call like thresholds, which is like, you know, typical thing is somebody says like, well, if I don't sleep much tonight, that's okay, but I can't have two nights like that in a row. Yeah. And one thing, you know, one thing that's kind of funny with these thresholds is that they're often completely arbitrary. Like, you know, 20 minutes, it can't be less than 20 minutes. It's like, it comes from kind of nothing. It just like,
yeah. I think a huge part of it comes from, a lot of this, like, I'm a quantitative like psychologist, cognitive neuroscientist. So I think a lot of it kind of comes from, who's that? I know you've talked about him a little bit, that neuroscientist from the UK.
Oh, Matt Walker?
Pardon?
Matt Walker? Walker?
Yeah, yeah. I think like people like him might be sort of like huge sort of like contributors to sort of like this way of thinking, this way of like sort of like operationalizing, measuring. Yeah, like I don't know where 20 minutes, I don't know where 2 days comes from. Like that is arbitrary, but like we just have this sort of like whatever reason, like sort of we're just prone to sort of like quantifying our sleep and our sleep performance and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just not healthy. It's kind of productive. Yeah.
No, I totally agree with you. I think like we love numbers because they give us a sense of control and like we can, you know, right? And in many aspects of life, I don't know, when you build a bridge, I'm sure it's really important to like know the numbers, right? But when it comes to like what happens inside us, emotions and feelings and sleep is kind of a reflection of that. Very, very tricky. Very tricky. And we have to try to control that. And you already mentioned like the timeless sleep window was really helpful. Listen to other people's stories and see similarities were really helpful. Any other kind of like insights or teachings that you found really helpful during the struggle?
Let me think for a bit. I think just being kind to yourself throughout. It's really easy to sort of minimize this issue because like, it's really hard for people who sleep well to empathize with it, for one. So, and they're not trying to, but through conversations with them, you can kind of feel a little bit invalidated. And it's not their fault at all. It's just, they just don't understand it. So yeah, you just need to like, be kind to yourself. If you do know someone with sleeping problems, talk to them, which is sort of like my outlet was, yeah, the podcast, because it just made me feel like I wasn't alone. It can be hard to be kind to yourself because, you know, if you are tired, it's easy to catastrophize and, you know, but yeah, just find the courage. You're stronger and braver than you know, and you'll beat it. I hope. I'm rooting for you.
Absolutely. No, I so glad you brought that up. I think of everything I teach and think really helps. It's like self-kindness. Nothing helps more, really, truly. And by the way, what's your PhD in?
Cognitive neuroscience. I'll try and explain it simply. It's in visual perception, and I measure people's brains using EEG and fMRI techniques. So EEG is just like the squiggles on the screen that you see in like movies and stuff, and fMRI are the pictures of brains with like the blobs on them. And so what I try and do is I'm testing like assumptions of this theoretical framework of perception and cognition called predictive coding or predictive processing. And what that's kind of about is this idea that our brains, when it comes to like, let's just isolate what we're talking about to visual perception, well, our brains are actually sort of like on a moment by moment basis, sort of like predicting or anticipating what's out there, and using data from our eyes as sort of like ways to calibrate the prediction. So our perception is actually prediction with our eye, with data from our eyes, like calibrating that, rather than sort of like the classical model of like our eyes take things in and then our brain sort of like encodes and makes sense of what our eyes are seeing. And so what I'm sort of like testing are just like subtle sort of like assumptions of this theoretical like framework that's been sort of championed by a lot of like the cognitive neuroscience community from about like the early 2000s. The early 2000s is when this theory kind of like really became popular, and it's just getting more, it's kind of just, you know, getting more and more support as time goes on, but you know, it's getting challenged as well. And so yeah, I think it's very interesting.
No, me too. Super yeah. Interesting. Anyway, not to get sidetracked. Oh, thanks for sharing that. And I guess I have my final two, like, which have kind of evolved by themselves into my standard last questions here, which is, one is, if you could, you may have already covered this, but if you could go back and talk to yourself when the struggle was happening, like, what would you tell yourself?
I think I would honestly tell myself like it's going to take time. Again, we're going back to this sort of idea of quantifying things. I was like, okay, when it started, I was like, okay, I can struggle with sleep, but it can only be for like 2 weeks. If I'm struggling with sleep for longer than 2 weeks, I just can't afford that. It's too bad. No. So if I could go back and tell myself, look, mate, it's going to take time, because like when you start off, you're in the denial, especially given that it was my second time, I was in the denial period where I'm like, nah, I'm not an insomniac again. No way. So it's like, I'd give myself like a reality check. Like, look, you're here. You just got to deal with it. Unfortunately. That's something I'd tell myself. And a second thing I'd tell myself would be just stop caring. Stop caring, man. Like, it's all gonna be okay. you're a pretty lucky guy. Things work out for you. This is no exception.
Love it. Actually, let's end on that note. It was just a wonderful place. So I want to thank you on behalf of the NATO community, myself, everyone. Thanks for being here, Ben, and be in touch. All right,
thank you.